Hello, everybody. JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce, Carlos Collazo, Jacob Rudner. We've got the whole draft crew here. Well, much of the draft crew here, I should say. Ben Badler out on a very exciting assignment right now. But we are here for Hot Sheet today. We are glad to have you with us. And we are going to talk all about the draft. We're going to talk a little prospects too, but we are going to focus today. We have a new mock draft out at baseballamerica.com that Carlos worked on for quite a while. And we are going to talk about that, talk about risers, talk about a couple of fallers as well. But I also do, before we jump in, I do want to remind you also, give you, if you don't know, heads up that we now have at baseballamerica.com, you can sign up for the Baseball Card America newsletter, where you will keep, if you love baseball cards, check it out. And there is kind of a key thing there, which is we are also, if you sign up, go to the Baseball America Twitter or Blue Sky or Instagram, find it in any of our social media. And we are giving away a Onyx vintage release box. We'll actually give away several. We're getting six, but you might win. So sign up. And if you love baseball cards, we are keeping you up to date on everything that's going on with baseball cards. And hey, maybe you get a very cool autograph card in the pack, in the box as well. But great to see everybody. So let's get to first move. It is time for the first move powered by Game Changer. More on Game Changer in a moment. But Carlos, we have a new mock draft. And I just want to kind of dive in. As you did this, what was your key takeaway at the start? What kind of jumped out to you more than anything as you kind of put this together?
Yeah, I feel like for the teams who are kind of picking after the first several picks, there's just a very muddled class. I don't know that there is a clear top 10 like we had in the 2024 class. I feel like that was a draft where there were a lot of players who were coming out and really performing and moving up boards. And you had this sort of top tier that you started to feel increasingly strong about as you got closer to the draft. I don't really think that's the case this year. There are a lot of college hitters that are struggling in conference play. We're seeing some college arms in the back of the first round kind of jump into that range because there is this dearth of college pitchers that we typically have at the very top. It seems like status quo with Rock Chalowski 1-1. I'm not sure that too many people are surprised by that. And the other thing that really stands out to me in this year's draft class is there is just a huge diversity of opinion in some of the better players in this class. If you talk to one team about a college outfielder and then talk to another team, you can have vastly different perceptions of where that talent fits. And so I think a lot of the draft this year is going to be about trying to match team tendencies, team philosophies. There are some players in this class that seem more model heavy, more model favorite teams. There are some other players that are more toolsy and come with a lot of upside and athleticism and projection, but really just have a lot of swing and miss questions. So I think a lot of questions in the first round. We've got college arms and pitchers in general moving up. And I think some hitters, some prominent hitters, maybe sliding or just failing to really cement themselves as top tier prospects in the class. So that's kind of the takeaway for me right now.
Man, I'm loving. I'm seeing already the questions showing up in the chat. We will get to some of those. C Carrera 951. Stick around. We are ending with, we are going to, in the third segment, talk about Noah Schultz and his debut. So we will get to that one, I promise you, and others of these we're going to get to as well. But we're looking at some of the guys who kind of, if you checked out this mock and you hadn't checked out previous mocks, there are a couple of names in there that you may be like, wait, what? Who? What? Mm-hmm. And I would say more than any, not surprisingly, one of the guys who's kind of burst onto the scene, Carlos, is a 6'9 lefty who... He's a Massachusetts kid, so who cares if it's 40 degrees when he's pitching? 40 degrees, let's provide the heat ourselves. We don't need a space heater or anything. 100 miles an hour from Brody Bumilla, even when it's his first start, and even when it's, as you can see in the video here, even with everyone else, they're bundled up like it is a Thanksgiving game, you know, day football game. So what jumped out as you were kind of figuring out how to slot Bumilla onto this list? How much is he moving up?
He seems to be moving up like a rocket ship. I mean, it's just a freak outlier sort of talent. You see it there. It's a 6'9" left-handed pitcher who's up to 101 miles per hour. Last year, we were talking about Jack Bauer touching 102 from the left side and talking about how historic that was. A year later, we have a pitcher who's throwing similar velocity with a much bigger frame. He's very tricky for me to feel confident putting into a mock draft. We've heard like, hey, the talent could fit in the first 10 picks. For me, I'm sort of skeptical of just how many teams would actually be willing to take on the risk profile that is inherent with Bumilla's prospect status. This is a high school pitcher already that eliminates a lot of teams from taking him in the first round. He's already had a serious elbow surgery. He hasn't really shown a lot of secondaries, so he's still kind of working into his repertoire, working deeper into games, but there's no doubt that it's massive upside talent. Maybe that's unsurprising that we have him tied to the Padres, because that just seems like a team that is willing every year to take on a lot of risk, that is not hesitant with the high school pitching demographics. But yeah, he just adds to this elite talent of the high school left-handed pitching in particular class. We could see multiple high school lefties go in the first 15, first 20 picks. It's him, Gio Rojas, Carson Bolomon has been a tremendous pitcher in the past, but Bimila is definitely the most notable up arrow, I would say, in this mock compared to our previous mock.
And we're going to Jeff for the live Bumilla weather report, because I know you're seeing him later this week. And good news.
It is 80 degrees here in Massachusetts now. So, yeah, it will be warm when he pitches this week. I think his next two opponents he's going to see in St. John's Shrewsbury, which is the alma mater of two big leaguers in Sean Burke and Ian Seymour. That tends to be one of the more talented teams out here in central Massachusetts, just a few minutes from my home. And I'll be back in my hometown of Taunton, Massachusetts next week to see him against Taunton High, which I think has won three of the last five Division I championships here in the state of Massachusetts. So he's seeing better competition now that he's getting deeper into the season. That being said, I played in this conference in sports. It is not high level, like Florida, North Carolina, Texas, California type of baseball. So he's not going to see those kind of guys. I think the thing that's exciting about Bumilla is there are teams that are kind of off it a little bit because of the history of arm injuries, the lack of a breaking ball there. But there's some other teams that are like, we can get this guy into our player development system. We can develop multiple breaking pitches, we think. Mechanically, he is not the most sound, and he's already throwing triple digits. We think we can get him a little cleaner to the plate. I think there's it depends kind of how you look at it. And it's one of the things that's fun about the draft, because from team to team, they have different chefs, they have different types of shoppers, and player development from team to team can really differ in terms of the types of traits that they like to target. So a really exciting name for me in my own backyard. We don't get a ton of those.
So before we go to Jacob, because we're going to talk about another riser, but there's a question from Uncle Ted here that, Carlos, I want to kick to you, which is, if Rock Chalowski, our likely number one pick, is such a great athlete, why does he have only one stolen base?
Yeah, so I think that sometimes people can think, like, if you're a great athlete, it just necessarily means that you're fast. That's not always the case. You can be a great athlete in terms of body control, hand-eye coordination, how you move around the field. And I do think that if you want to critique Rock's profile, the speed tool is the tool that you could maybe point to and say, hey, that's not the plus tool. Everything else has a chance to be plus. But Rock is a tremendous athlete. If you just watch him, Jacob had some great video of Rock Chalowski taking in and out recently. He's seen him as much as anyone. If you watch the way he moves around the field, you can just see that he has this grace, this body control, this coordination. He was also a really talented football player as a quarterback in high school. So I think there are a lot of athletic movements he makes on the baseball field that really give me confidence in his athleticism, just the reliability that he has as a defender. I don't think if you're just saying athlete equals fast, that's always the case. We've seen a lot of really impressive athletes, and in particular baseball athletes, who stand out for their athleticism in a number of different ways. I know there are a lot of pitchers who stand out for their athleticism, and it's not the NBA style, can really get out and transition and run and jump at elite levels, but it's sort of this kind of proprioception and body control athleticism. And I do think Rock Chalowski has that at a high level, both defensively and offensively. And I think that's part of the reason why he's such a polished player on both sides of the ball right now.
Speaking of you, I want to also say, like Jacob was noting in the Slack, average to above average runner. So we're not talking about like a plotter either. It's just that he's not right, like a 70 runner or anything like that. But Jacob, speaking of UCLA, speaking of risers, you've seen this UCLA team a lot. And Logan Redman just basically had one of the most dominant starts that we've seen all year. He's moving up in the mock as well. What should people know about Logan Redman?
Well, you want to talk about that most recent outing. It's probably the best outing by any pitcher in the country all year. Struck out 18 batters, that ties a UCLA record that was set back in 2000, a nation-leading 34 whiffs in that game. But everything is kind of trending up beyond that. That's a really good Big Ten result, and I know that there are SEC fans who are listening to this we're going to scoff at the fact that he beat up on Rutgers. That's fine. Do it. He has been so good beyond that outing as well. And that's why I think a lot of teams are starting to buy in. The top end fastball velocity is in the upper 90s. I watched him with my own two eyes against USC sit 98 to 99 in the first inning of that outing. He's got a pretty good slider. He's got a pretty good cutter. And his changeup, according to a number of scouts, is at least plus. He throws a lot of strikes. He's got great pitchability. He's a really good athlete, so he moves super well. And I think that teams are starting to realize in a weaker college pitching class that a guy who brings that level of polish, plus his stuff is also really good, he's an easy guy to fall in love with. So Carlos saw him, you know, way up in the mock draft recently. I think that that's a really great reflection of how the industry is starting to heat up on him, and the results have certainly matched that.
There were several pitching performances this last week that really did stand out. We, you know, really kind of up and down the board. I want to kind of come back to you, Jacob, really quickly also. We also had, speaking of, we had another pitcher who was going to be on when we update our rankings the next time, because we're going to go to 400. Steel Murdoch's going to be on there. But I would imagine that he did a lot to help himself this past weekend. And I know that he's a guy that you've also enjoyed watching pitch.
Yeah, I mean, whenever you go out and you strike out 17 batters and break a program record, that's going to do good things for your draft stock generally. Steel Murdoch did just that against a pretty good UCSB team on the road. So it wasn't like it was a slouchy opponent or a midweek game where he turned out in some, you know, incredible performance. This was a really meaningful, high-stress game, actually, that had postseason implications. The stuff is really impressive with Murdoch. It is just two pitches, but he has a cut-ride fastball that's up to 99. It's looked really good at times. And then his slider is one of the better sliders in the country. It was running a near 50% miss rate going into that start. That number's only gone up. It's a true gyro pitch. He comes from an interesting angle and kind of attacks with some steepness to his stuff. And he's just an interesting pitcher. I know that there are teams that are really starting to pay attention to him. This most recent start is certainly kind of one of those rocket ship moments for a prospect who's outside of the top three rounds, let's say, range, but maybe has some potential to even crack that group and certainly be in the tier right behind it.
That was our first move powered by Game Changer, the number one youth sports app that helps you coach smarter, connect live, and replay the action. Learn more at gc.com. Let's continue the conversation by going back to school. So the college outfield class, you mentioned this, Carlos, that this is a class that college bats, college outfielders especially, it does feel like there's a very much eye of the beholder. There are players who some teams like way more and some teams are not fans of, and vice versa. There's other guys who really stand out the other way. We do have a question here that kind of fits into this, which is from Ben Follenkamp, who asks, is it curious that Curiel, that's Derek Curiel, the LSU outfielder, is playing better in SEC play than he was against the non-conference schedule? Which, by the way, if you're going to pick one of the two, this is what you want to do. This for evaluators, for models, and everything like that. Hitting better in SEC play than non-conference play is going to do you really well. Hitting worse in SEC play than non-conference play, a la what Justin LeBron unfortunately is doing, is not going to serve you as well. So take us through like this outfield class, the first round outfield class. Mm-hmm. How hard is it to line it up right now?
Yeah, well, first of all, I appreciate Ben bringing up Curiel, because he's a man of my own heart here. I think I'm probably the highest in Curiel of anyone in this room. And I think maybe what's indicative of this college class is I feel like if we went around this room right here just with us and said, hey, pick your first college outfielder, I'm not sure that any of us would all pick the same player. And I think that is kind of what's going on throughout the industry. So right now, Sawyer Strawsnyder at TCU, he feels like a guy who's either at the top of this college outfield tier or maybe in a tier of his own. I got that comment back from some scouts when I was doing reporting for this mock draft. He just seems to have the combination of performance and well-rounded athleticism, tool set, physicality, center field profile. Like, he does check a lot of boxes. That said, Sawyer Strawsnyder does have some missed questions. He's hitting under 300 for the season, which would be low for any sort of college hitter going inside the top 10. And then you move down into profiles like AJ Gracia at Virginia, Drew Burris at Georgia Tech, Derek Curiel, who you mentioned. I think depending on the teams you're talking to, those players are either obvious top 10 sorts of talents in the class, and then there are some other teams who don't view them as no doubt first round picks at all. So it's just very unusual to get this sort of variance in the profiles. I think with Drew Burris, you probably are looking at more of the model heavy teams that are really into just the performance he's shown over the last 3 years, his ability to get the ball in the air to the pole side. That's something that model teams really love to see. And then more traditional scouting type teams with Burris in particular are maybe a little bit more skeptical of how he does it offensively, the size, the lack of projection that he has at the next level. You can move further down the board and get in guys like Caden Sorrell, Aiden Robbins. Sorrell is another toolsy power speed type who's really performing at a high level. But you look at his strikeout rate, both historically and this season, he is pushing that sort of red flag threshold that a lot of teams are just going to really be scared to pull the trigger on a guy like that in the first round. I don't know if we have time for it, but I would be very curious who everyone here in this room would take of that college outfield group first. I think for me, it'd be Strohsnyder. But if you guys want to throw around who you prefer, I think that'll maybe kind of give some insight into this combo.
Who would you have, Jeff, first?
I honestly am going to go with Aiden Robbins here. I've had conversations with even directors within the last 24 hours that are picking, you know, within the side of the top 20 and view him as like a very reasonable option there. Maybe even a player that doesn't get to them outside of the top 10. He's had a great season. He had a great season last year at Seton Hall. I think he's answered a lot of questions in terms of the impact and being able to hit for it. He's kind of been, you know, the primary guy in that offense. And one of the most important and most impactful transfers this spring. I like Robbins a lot. I don't know if he's a center fielder long-term. I think there's a lot of similarities between him and another Carlos favorite, Dylan Cruz, actually.
What about you, Jacob?
I was going to say Jeff's pick with Aiden Robbins. I just like everything that he does. So I'll say somebody different for the sake of the conversation here. Logan Hughes at Texas Tech is really intriguing to me. He hits the ball super hard. Carlos and I got a look at him earlier in the year, and he didn't have that great of a weekend. It's only been kind of up arrow from there. Not necessarily going to be the best defender of this group. We're talking about guys like Strohsnyder and Aiden Robbins, but he might hit the ball the hardest. And so I'll always fight for a guy who can kind of put a little bit of juice into the baseball, and Logan Hughes can certainly do that.
I can't say so. I was thinking I was going to say Strohsnyder, but I need to see get his batting average over 300. I've done a study on it. There is no such thing.
JJ's representing the model heavy teams here.
Yes, I'm a model. My model is if you don't hit 300, you're not a first round pick as a college bat. And if you are, you're probably not going to put it all together. It's a very, very, but I'll just point out with Drew Burris. I don't know if he'd be my first off the board, but just I would point out that he's already put on his resume at the elite college level one of the best season we're seeing of any of these guys. The problem for him is he did it 2 years ago, and he's not doing it this year. And that's going to be a challenge to evaluate because you do know it's in there, but at the same time, it's now kind of almost ancient history in some ways. So that's a little bit of a challenge. He is on one of the best teams, obviously, in college baseball this year. Got a big series coming up this weekend as well. We want to keep going to the questions, though, too. So we got a question here from Jay's 4946, which is kind of a little bit of a theory. It's a Pirates question, which is asking, let me find it here. There we go. So if you have the top four, is it the Pirates with the money that they have, is it going to probably jumble a little bit about teams taking the top players at the top because the Pirates have maybe a little bit more money to throw, especially at one of the high school shortstops? I will start by going to you, Carlos, by pointing out you still can take the guy and all he can do is either sign or not. You can say that this is my asking price, but as we've seen before, the team gets to pick the player. And at the end of the day, are you going to turn down $6, $7, $8 million, whatever it is, because you thought you might have gotten a little bit more if you'd have been slid down a little further? But go ahead, Carlos.
Yeah, you kind of teed the question and answered it, but the answer is, like, yes, if a team in front of the Pirates wants Grady Emerson, they're just going to take Grady Emerson. And the fact that the Pirates have the largest bonus pool is not going to just mean that if the Pirates can offer a larger deal if they don't get a chance to pick the player. It doesn't really matter. I think for the Pirates, importantly, it will allow them to be more flexible in how they navigate the board, particularly with their later picks. If there are players who slide, or if there are high school players who are in this sort of big asking price but still can go to college range, you see a lot of high school pitchers going in this range. They're going to be able to put out really big offers for players in that range with their next few picks. And maybe if teams in front of them go with underslot deals, you'll get one of the top players in the class to you. But again, like JJ said, you can't get Rochelowski if the White Sox are just going to take him at one. So there's a limit to how much you can force or slide players down the board.
One other outfielder I want to ask, Jacob, I'll kind of throw this to you, which is Anthony Mazzano asked, what about the thoughts about Zion Rose, the Louisville outfielder, back from injury now? What are we seeing from Zion Rose?
I mean, he's really looked the part ever since coming back, and I think it's been a huge boon to his draft stock. There's a reason Carlos had him in the first round conversation. I think that he's somebody who's a really good athlete. We've seen that he's got a really good feel for hitting. It's average, maybe slightly above average game power. And I think that teams are kind of seeing the player that they expected going into the year. We had him really well positioned in our preseason draft rankings, and then it was only the injury that caused him to move back a little bit. So now that he's fully healthy, the performance has come back as well. I see him as a pretty secure first-round draft pick, especially in a muddled college outfield demographic like we were just talking about. He's another name. Caden Sorrell is another guy who I'll shout out that we didn't talk about very much yet. Who are, you know, very much a part of a group at the top of the board that you can kind of pick in a number of different ways.
Mm-hmm. One more question we'll get to before we talk a little bit of Noah Schultz. Ben Fullenkamp asks about the college pitching class. Carlos, it does feel jumbled. As Ben puts it, he says, like, it's Jackson, Flora, and then chaos. I'll ask the question even, is it Jackson, Flora, and chaos, or is it chaos?
I think it's Jackson, Flora, and then chaos. I think Jackson, Flora has done a really nice job this year. He's performed. He has the pitch mix to warrant going at the top of the class. He's been very consistent. I mean, there have been other pitchers in the country that have been more dominant that are just not available to be picked this year. Dax Whitney from next year is pretty appealing. But I do think that that is a question that teams are wondering about and asking. I think Logan Redman and Cole Carlone, who are two pitchers that we've talked about today, who are up arrow guys in this mock draft, in other draft classes, they might just be pitchers that are going more in the second round or after the first round, but they're kind of performing. They do things at a high level. Carlone maybe has a double plus slider that some teams are really high on. But there is this sort of lack of college arms, particularly in power conferences, that are going out and performing and are healthy. I think at Coastal Carolina, Cameron Flukie getting going in a few weeks will maybe help kind of solve this a little bit. If he comes out and is the pitcher that he's been over the last 2 years, he could very easily slide into this top 10 overall range without anyone really flinching at that. I think he checks a lot of boxes from a pitchability command perspective. He's got a track record as a starter. He's got multiple high quality breaking pitches. Liam Peterson, who kind of entered the season in this tier with Flora and with Flukie, he has been so up and down this year. I still think he's a player that teams inside the top 10 are scouting pretty heavily because his pure stuff is among the best in the class. And when you see him right, he's utterly dominant. But just the strikes and the command and the consistency with him has been not what teams want to see. And so his range of outcomes is quite wide. And so I do think it is pretty chaotic after Jackson, Flora. It is not the college pitching group that we had last year, that's for sure.
It is a lot of chaos. So that was our back to school. We'll be back at the final sprint right after this.
Guys, you ever get it from your children all the time? Dad, same old meal. I get it all the time from my children. And guess what? You look at HelloFresh, all of a sudden you can get a plethora of different meals. We have so many different things that we can choose from. The kids are happy, and especially my wife and I are happy. HelloFresh has all different types of varieties that can fit for you and your family.
80 plus global recipes every month. You want to travel around the world, Todd, Father?
Of course.
I've had Vietnamese, Moroccan, Caribbean. Oof. I mean, all kinds of flavors coming at you. Unique ingredients. There's a little lemongrass, curry paste, all pre-portioned for you too. That's the beauty of HelloFresh. So go to HelloFresh.com/FT10FM now to get 10 free meals plus a free NutriBullet Ultra Plus 2-in-1 compact kitchen system. That's a $189.99 value on your nice third box. Free meals perfect applied as a discount on the first box. New subscribers only, varies by plan. Must order the third box by May 31st, 2026.
For the final sprint, as I promised C. Carrera, we haven't forgotten about you. Noah Schultz makes his major league debut tonight. Noah Schultz versus Shane McClanahan. What a matchup we have tonight. Jeff, what should we expect from the White Sox massive, and I do mean massive, left-hander?
Yeah, I think we got to look at what he's doing year over year, what his pitch mix has been like year over year, the usage. Things have changed a lot for Noah Schultz in a year. Obviously struggled a little bit last year. They went back into the lab. He's cut his sinker usage, his sweeper or traditional slider usage. He's cut his curveball usage. He remade his cutter, which was a pitch that used to move arm side that now is more of a breaking ball and is moving glove side. That pitch went from 1.3% usage last year. It was a different pitch, but it was classified as a cutter, to 21.1%. I wouldn't call this a fastball, but I know that that's kind of the trendy term to use when someone's throwing a sinker, four seam, and a cutter as their primary mix. That's really how the usage has been split. It accounts for about 70% of Schultz's usage right now. He's still throwing that slider 12% of the time, the big sweeper that we've come to know and kind of love. The curveball is still seeing usage at about 12%. The changeup is seeing usage about 9%. So more or less, he has six pitches right now that are seeing 10% usage or more. Other things that have changed, he's raised his arm slot. Some of that is the higher usage of the cutter, I think. It's by a few inches. It's not substantial, but enough that it's creating a little bit more of a steeper plane on that cutter, on that sinker, and it's just playing up a little bit different. He's added two ticks of velocity onto the sinker. He was more 94 to 95 last year. He's been more 95, 96 to 97, 98 this year. So that's playing up a little bit more. It's really interesting to sort of take a look at it. Some of the adjustments in terms of the arm angle, some of the adjustments in terms of the style of that cutter, but also the usage and velocity across his pitch mix as well. So there's three or four different boxes here, JJ, that Schultz has really checked. And I think that set him up to be successful. It was something that I had kind of pinged internally in our internal Slack after his second start that I thought this guy was kind of ready for the show. And then a few days later, Schultz ends up getting the call. Will be interesting to see how it translates initially. We never kind of know what the initial landing is going to be like. Guys sometimes struggle unexpectedly. Sometimes it's just a matter of bad luck. So we'll see. But I do think this is another step forward with this Chicago White Sox organization, which has become a very watchable team, a really interesting up-and-coming team as well, that still has, you know, some more ponies in the barn that could be up in the next couple of months.
We're going to be seeing Hagen Smith probably before too long as well. That is the Baseball America Hot Sheet Show. Thank you. A lot of great questions today. We always love getting to those. Thank you all for all of those. Do check out baseballamerica.com, the mock draft, the data standouts, the top college top 25, and Baseball Card America. Check that out, and please like and subscribe the YouTube channel. You will get a ton of video every week. We love doing this for you. Thank you, everybody. See you next week.